This is Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, on your flagship station of the Jacksonville Jaguars, News Talk Radio WOKV. To join Brian Sexton, Jeff Lagerman, and Vic Ketchman, dial 355-NFL-1. That's 355-6351. Outside the Jacksonville calling area, dial 1-800-355-NFL-1. Jaguars This Week is brought to you in part by Prudential Network Realty, Ticket Exchange, and by the Jacksonville Transportation Group. Now, here's the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton.
Good evening and welcome inside Jaguars Central, inside the stadium. Brian Sexton along with Vic Ketchman. Joe Fortunato here, and, well, he's here in body, but not in voice this evening, ladies and gentlemen.
My voice is gone.
It's gone.
But I'm here.
Because we're having a great conversation about Olympic hockey and remembering the miracle on ice from 30 years ago. I was asking you guys if you saw the Al Michaels piece over the weekend that NBC did about that and how what a phenomenal job. It's about a 35 or 40 minute piece.
Well, we love to relive our great memories. So we're calling what happened Sunday night, you know, the new miracle, but it's not. It's not the same when you have Brian Rafalski and Ryan Miller. I mean, you're loaded with NHL stars. And, you know, Mike Ruzzioni, no one knew him.
Right.
Mark Johnson, no one knew him. Jim Craig, no one knew him. And, of course, they went on to nothing. I mean, Craig was a
marginal goaltender for Calgary and Atlanta.
He was a failure. Okay. He was a bust. Mark Johnson played some years for the Penguins, but he was just a guy. Ruzzioni didn't play for anybody. I mean, they were amateurs. They were true, in every sense of the word, amateurs, and they beat the greatest hockey team on the face of the earth.
Is that the greatest sports call ever?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, until Dave Wydell did it, of course.
After you beat the Broncos.
Wydell would have you believe that Michael stole it from him.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. No doubt.
That's Dave.
And, you know, Michaels was telling about the call because he was asked about it. But the thing that made it so great was the hockey players wanted to know about Michael's remembrances of it.
Uh-huh.
You know, they're looking for every little thread that ties the whole story together. And he says, look, he says, I thought about it in the last minute. He says, because Michaels is such a pro, he's not into using catchphrases like, oh my, you know, like Dick Enberg or some of those other guys do.
Yeah.
He's such a pro's pro. He said, if I would have had the time to think about it, I wouldn't have done it. But I didn't have the time to think about it. It was just such a moment that you could tell. I mean, clearly, and you've got four Super Bowls with the Steelers to think of, but clearly that is the most memorable sporting event of my life.
Oh, it was fabulous. Did either of you see the movie Miracle?
I've never seen it.
Okay. In the movie,
it's Kurt Russell.
Herb Brooks is the coach of the U.S. hockey team, is beating the heck out of these guys in conditioning drills. He's making them skate up and down the ice until their tongues are hanging out. They're just, he's killing them. And every so often he'd stop, give them a little break, and he'd ask one of them, who do you play for? And the kid would say, University of Wisconsin, sir. Okay, back on the line. And he'd skate some more. And it took him forever to figure out that he wanted him to say, the United States. I play for the United States. I got to tell you, Jeff, I think I'd have figured that out quicker. I really do. I think that was a BS part of that movie. I got to believe that any athlete with any kind of instincts for how coaches operate would have figured that one out a lot quicker.
Come on, the movie's kind of embellishing.
You betcha. Yeah, that probably happened one time.
Poetic
one
license.
Guy answered it wrong, and they, you know, they turn it into an entire theme of the movie.
Well, another one of the stories that they were telling on Saturday was about they had one of those skate sessions between the game against the Soviets, which most people think was the gold medal game, but obviously it was not. It was against Finland.
Yes.
They had one of those skate sessions between them because Herb Brooks did not want his guys to sit and feel good about themselves for two full days.
Finland was leading, I believe, after two periods, 2-1.
2-1.
2-1. And I don't remember that. I don't remember the third period charge, but they blew him away in the third period. And that was a memory of mine that had kind of, it was somehow I'm not tainted or tarnished, but it wasn't very clear. And when I heard that, I was surprised. I didn't realize how close they came to blowing the whole thing.
You know what a lot of people don't recall, and this was another thing that NBC did a great job with, is that people talk about how they watched it and they remember it and they watched it, and they suckered a lot of people into. You remember watching, oh, I watched it, I missed. Mm-hmm. People didn't realize they were watching it on tape delay. And it was,
that's
it was
right.
not broadcast
that's right.
live. It was a game that was played during the day. Mm-hmm. It was like a 3 o'clock game. And Jim McKay had a famous introduction. He said, if you have not already heard, I will not be the one to ruin it for you.
Do you know?
It's how they introduced the start of this tape delay broadcast.
The game Sunday between the U.S. and Canada was so fast, it was tough to watch. That, I mean, did you watch it?
No.
The speed, Jeff, they had three breakaways, three consecutive breakaways, Joe. You remember that? Breakaway here, stop, threw it across two lines, breakaway at that end, stop, threw it across two lines, breakaway down that end. I think it was a score. Did they score or were they all three stopped?
They were all stopped.
They were all stopped. Okay. I mean, you might see one breakaway in a hockey game.
Right.
But to see it, to see three in a row, to see three within 10 seconds, 10, 15 seconds, the game Sunday was played faster than I have ever seen any athletic event, any sporting, any game played in my life. It was so fast, it was actually too fast to follow.
All right, one quick more thought from the Al Michaels thing, and then we want to play the five-year-old that does the Herb Brooks speech on YouTube, if you haven't seen it, just, you know, to tie it all into the Olympics here, and then we'll talk about the combine.
Yeah, we got to do that.
Al Michaels had to stay and do the game between Finland and whoever the other quarterfinal team was, the semifinalist. And he thought it was big. It felt big to him. But he told the story, and he did such a magnificent job, that, you know, 3 hours later when he finally got out of the building, because remember, it was on tape delay, the streets were filled with people and American flags everywhere, and the party was raging. It was only then that he realized what that victory meant.
And, you know, Herb Brooks, he ran off.
Off the ice after they won.
Yeah, he didn't want any part of. He didn't want to be interviewed. He wanted the stage for
Why?
His players. For his players.
Because he was not involved in it at all. At any part in time from when he got those guys and traveled the world to the gold medal game, he never went on the ice ever. So he didn't want it to be out of character. Mm-hmm. And Ruzioni, who was the guy who fought him more than anyone else, said that was the part. That was the turning point where everybody grabbed onto him.
He ran into the locker room.
Yep. Because it was the players' moment. Everything good, everything bad had been players' moment.
Beloved, a classic Lombardi, feared and loved. I mean, he was a taskmaster. He was feared, and while he was beating him up, I'm sure he was hated too, but ultimately loved. You know, one of those classic old coaches, one of the classic old Lombardi types, Paul Brown types, you know, a guy you hate to love, or you love to hate.
And when you talk about the great coaches, you know, talk about Lombardi and Knoll and Landry and those guys, even John Wooden, Red Auerbach in the NBA and college basketball, you got to put Herb Brooks in the sporting event in there.
Absolutely.
And that's why we're going to play the five-year-old speech, because his speech in the locker room before the game against the Soviets, you may have heard it, you may have heard about it.
No. Herb Brooks' pep talk to the Soviets. This five-year-old kid...
No, to his team before the Soviet
right.
game. Right.
This five-year-old kid, his father was a Do You Believe in Miracles junkie.
Right.
All right? And his kid, I guess, picked up the obsession, the enthusiasm for it from his dad, and he memorized Herb Brooks' famous
right.
Newt Rockne-type speech.
That's exactly what it is.
And I think they had him give the speech to the U.S. team on Sunday, right?
They did. So here's the speech in
Good
the kid's
stuff.
Words. It's great stuff.
Great moments are born from great opportunities. That's what you have here tonight, boys. That's what you earned here tonight. One game. If we play them 10 times, they might win 9. But not this game. Not tonight. Tonight, we skate with them. Tonight, we stay with them. And we shut them down because we can. Tonight, we are the greatest hockey team in the world. We were born to be hockey players. Every one of you. And you were meant to be here tonight. This is your time. Their time is done. It's over. I'm sick and tired hearing about what a great hockey team the Soviets have. Screw them. This is your time. Now go out there and take it.
Somehow, coming from a five-year-old, it has incredible impact.
Yeah.
And with that, we will leave one of the great moments in American sports history behind us and turn our attention back to football as Jaguars This Week rolls along.
Please don't.
I was thinking about a line from Major League. Nope. They don't call him the best in the business. What is it that Bob Uecker says? Woo, that expensive broadcasting school sure is paying off. All right, on to the combine. Now, we're looking at the map here of this vicious winter storm that is going to take over the Northeast starting on Thursday. It looks like you're in the clear. Looks like Indiana is not part of this, although, you know, things can change. But the real heavy snow, New York, Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, Vermont.
How about players trying to get there?
Oh, yeah, it could be. If you're trying to get out of the Northeast, you better get out now.
No, I know that kind of storm. That's a nor'easter.
Yeah, well, they're talking about paralyzing snow.
Yeah.
So could be interesting, but you're headed up that direction.
Yeah. I mean,
when are you going, Friday?
Friday morning early. I'll be there. I'll be in the air when the coin is tossed.
When are they doing that?
So, but we're going to have it up, folks, on Jaguars.com. 7:45 a.m., the coin will be tossed.
Okay.
And we will have it on Jaguars.com, hopefully at 7:46.
Who's making the call for the Jaguars?
There's no call. It's a coin that Jaguars logo on one side and the Bears logo on the other.
So they went out.
Is it a real coin?
It's a real coin with the Bears logo on one
and
side, Jaguars on the other.
It.
You throw it up in the air. If Jaguars come up, they pick 10. If the Bears come up, the Broncos pick 10.
So who's present in the room?
Perkins. Mike Perkins is the Jaguars representative.
Okay.
So do they make replica coins to sell? Franklin Mint.
The winning
NFL.
team.
Depends
on if the player is real.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this isn't a Terry Bradshaw kind of coin toss. But that's not to say it won't turn out to be that
way.
Who knows
what it will be.
I mean, let's say, for instance, they flip this coin and the Jaguars win, and at number 10 they pick a guy who becomes the next Tony Boselli. Or the
pass rush that they need so desperately.
Or the next Fred Taylor. Fred Taylor was a pick at 9.
Right.
All right, let's say they pick a really, really good player. Let's say he goes on to become a Hall of Fame player here. And the guy that the Broncos pick at 11 turns out to be a stiff. I'm talking about the difference between Terry Bradshaw and Mike McCoy. 1970 draft. Bradshaw went on to win 4 Super Bowls, MVP in 2 of them, and went to the Hall of Fame. Mike McCoy played a few years in the league, was just nothing more than a guy, and then faded away. So, clearly the difference there was enormous.
The coin would have significance for that team.
Hey, listen, we saw what can happen in 2004 when the Jaguars had a choice between Ben Roethlisberger and Reggie Williams.
Oh, yeah.
See what I mean?
No, you don't have to reach very far to come
and
up
I can
with
tell you who Gene Smith would have picked. And it wouldn't have been Reggie Williams. Trust me.
Our phone number this evening is 355-NFL-1. Not sure that we'll get to many calls, but if you'd like to join us, 800-355-6351. The phone call is entirely free and clear to you. All right, you're going up there with what in your notebook? What questions, what topics, what things are you hoping to accomplish in your short stay in Indy?
Well, we want to do about 7 or 8 videos. I have planned a very interesting video with Coach Del Rio. I'm not going to reveal its subject matter yet because you never know how these things turn out.
Certainly.
So I don't want to pin myself into a corner. But if it goes as planned, I think everyone is going to love this video. I think, in fact, Coach Del Rio suggested this. I wouldn't have had the guts to bring it up. He did. And I think you're going to love it. I'll just leave it at that for now. I might throw some hints over the weekend once I see how things are going. You never know with Coach.
True enough.
He might say...
Plan can change.
Yeah. He might say Ketchman's a pain in the butt.
Might say that. Might say that. Might say it once.
We will do, obviously, interviews with Gene Smith and Terry McDonough from the Jaguars personnel department to try to get a feel for what they're seeing and for what they're thinking. I'll do an interview with the coordinators, Dirk Koetter and Mel Tucker, talk specifically about, you know, what do they need and what's available to them, and how can they join the two, you know, their thoughts.
I'm not just trying to blow up your balloon here, okay, but because you're sitting here, but does any other team website provide this level of access for their team at the combine?
I don't know, but I'll bet you they do. I mean, listen, the team sites are really ramping up. When we started doing this, we were one of two or three.
What year?
2000.
Okay.
Wayne came to me. I was still doing Jaguars Inside Report at the time. Rest in peace. And Wayne came to me. He was head of the Business Ventures Committee. And at the time, the NFL was really pushing NFL.com. So you're head of Business Ventures Committee, and your number one thing is NFL.com. Then you better at least have a team site that is also pushing. And he came to me, and you know, with the idea of also doing Jaguars.com in addition to Jaguars Inside Report. Now, all these years later, Inside Report is, you know, I mean,
what year did that go under?
2000, winter of 2004. Its last season was 2003. So, okay. I mean, its tombstone is starting to get a little gray.
Right.
You know, got a little dirt on
it. Got some moss.
Yes, exactly.
Well, but the level of access.
And here I am doing something
right.
That I never, when I came here, I never knew would exist.
Well, you ventured into technology now, obviously, with what this is.
Minute,
hey, it's capitalism, right? It's an evolution of what you do. Here's my point. I can never imagine Tom Coughlin allowing you the kind of access that you're getting. You know, Gene Smith is obviously going to great lengths to provide Terry McDonough and himself. It's a great service for the fans. I mean, you can watch the NFL Network, but I got to be honest, that starts to get old after.
I would have badgered Coughlin until he would have allowed more and more rope, but not like Gene. Gene has, folks, you really got a gem here. I mean, you got a guy. You know, the buzzword now in politics is transparency. We need transparency. I'm going to tell you got transparency. I mean, Gene Smith is really is a transparent general manager. Now, he's not going to cost himself.
He's not going to show you his board.
He's not going to, he's not going to show you his hand, so to speak, and cost himself a pick because he tipped his hand to a competitor. But he really is giving the fans information. He's the guy who told me, he sent me a text message this morning, what time the coin flip is, and he helped me arrange to get that information to, you know, to Jaguars, to the fans through Jaguars.com. He sent me a text message this morning, see you at Starbucks in the hotel lobby at 6 a.m. Saturday and Sunday, lucky me. And
I don't know what I'm more surprised at, that Gene Smith texts or that you do.
No, I didn't text back. I don't know how to do it.
Okay.
I waited until I got to work, and then I sent an email. You start doing that crap, Jeff, and everyone will start, you know, I'll have my sons will be texting me. You know, my wife, she'll go text crazy.
And that'd be terrible, right?
No, I don't. They Heck people know.
Family.
I turn the phone on when I'm in the car and when I'm on the road in hotels and stuff like that.
Other than that, it's off.
Yeah. I mean, it's I think those you know, they give you brain cancer.
Yeah, they could.
I don't want that. I got rear end cancer.
He doesn't need more.
So I don't want to get the other end going, you know?
All right. Let's take a break. News now on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Welcome back. Jaguars this week rolling along towards the top of the hour. 23 minutes left in our program. We've sent Loggeman home. It wasn't doing any good.
No, he's sick.
He's got no voice left, and the only chance he had was to get you sick. And he kept inching his chair closer and closer to you.
Yeah, no, he wants to send me to Indianapolis, you know, on my hands and knees.
He had that
in a hotel room.
Devilish little smile as he leaned over into
Well, he's
you.
Home recovering. He could rest, you know,
rest
comfortably
assured
knowing that I was had my head in the, you know, I was riding the rim all
getting
week.
Getting up
all
at
weekend.
6 a.m.
Yeah.
He had to do some work. So, Loggy, both hands on the wheel the rest of the way. Get your voice back. We need you next week. And so we roll along with our conversation with the Combine, which really gets in full swing tomorrow.
I think the Jaguars go to the Combine. Most of the coaches are going tomorrow or Friday. I got some riding up with me on Friday morning and some others. I think most of them are going tomorrow. I think the Jaguars go to the combine this weekend, pretty much knowing who their guy, who their candidates are for the first round. I really believe that. And I think they're going there to interview those candidates and find out which one interviews best.
Did you see Peter King's Monday Morning Quarterback the other day where he had an unnamed NFL personal man? But just your perspective on that.
It's probably Polian.
Okay. But is that true that most teams, based on tape study, what they've seen on the film, have their boards to a large degree done, and at this point you're just polishing it with the combine?
Yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
Breaking news.
Yeah, I didn't understand what he was trying to get across there.
Well, that was always my understanding, is they went with a lot of the work already done. Because that's what their scouts and personnel guys have been doing.
And the story I did with Gene Smith yesterday, he says that the main objective for the Jaguars this weekend is to acquire information on medical, character, and psychological issues.
So the first 3 days of the combine,
psychological
the
testing,
work done, right?
Meaning who would you rather kill? You know, the family dog, a family member, or a bad man?
Just for fun, we ought to get that question list, and I could pose those to you and to Jeff next week.
And you want the guy who would rather kill the family member, of course.
It's not a nice game.
It means he's more ruthless. You know, that kind of stuff.
He's only half kidding, folks.
Psychological testing is, you know, which do you prefer, dogs or cats? You want a guy that prefers dogs because that's about loyalty. All right.
I would think it's about aggressiveness. Dogs are more aggressive than cats.
Well, there is something about that. You want your defensive. Cats are more. I forget how this goes, but you want your defensive guys to want one animal more than the other, and you. But this is what I'm trying to say is this psychological testing. There's a lot of dogs and cats kind of stuff, and monkeys and cows in it. Cows are contented.
And so how does a guy
like monkeys are gregarious and. Dogs are loyal and cats are cunning. You know, I mean, that's the way they do this. I mean, you know.
I don't know
what
where
football
going,
player
but...
is going to say they like cats better.
That's the psychological testing. I don't know.
How does a guy like Tim Tebow, just to use a name of a guy who we've heard this week has been working to improve himself, okay? How does a guy, any college player, get ready for that psychological stuff?
I don't think you get it. They're gonna get the real answers out of you. They're gonna get this is done by smart people. They're gonna find out what your personality traits are. Jaguars want to know what a guy's true personality is. The Jaguars want to talk to him in the interviews. They want to. That's where you address the character issues. You know, when you're talking to him and you ask him what he felt, you know, when he hit that guy over the head. If he averts his eyes, well, he's not giving you the truth. If he says, hey, look, I'm really sorry, you know, I won't do that again, and he's looking right at you, hey, that's a good guy.
What if he says, I really liked it? It helped me get my anger and rage out. It felt good.
Now you really want him. I mean, that's your man.
Joe, pull the microphone down real quick. Ask Joe the dog and cat question, and let's psychoanalyze him.
So, Joe.
Hi.
I got five animals. I got a cow, a monkey, a cat, a dog, and a lion.
Okay.
Which one is most like you?
The lion.
There you go. He's an aggressive. You're a defensive player, son.
My cat just shut the radio off, though.
You're a linebacker.
Joe has a
Thanks,
couple
Coach.
Cats. Great big fat cats too, mm-hmm. Don't you?
No, just one. One's left.
But that's the kind of stuff they ask.
They were delicious.
Terrible, terrible.
Well, that's really bad.
So I really think they're going there with the idea that they know who their candidates are because they know that this is a defensive draft. First round. This is heavy with defensive guys, especially pass rushers, especially defensive linemen. Derek Morgan is almost certainly going to be one of their candidates. Jason Pierre-Paul will be one of their candidates. I don't know about Dunlap, the kid from Florida, because he's got the DUI. He's a guy that, if he's a candidate for them, they need to talk to him and talk about, you know, his personality traits, find out what his character is, find out about this DUI. You get questions answered.
Sure. People make mistakes. Was it a mistake? Or is it a part of a perpetual behavior pattern?
So, you know, they've got all of these defensive candidates, I'm sure, that, you know, right there on their at the top of their list, and they're going to interview them. And if somebody can find out if somebody, say, for instance, the senior editor of Jaguars.com could find out
indeed
who they interview.
Indeed.
Then we might know who they're going to draft.
So we should expect a huge traffic weekend at Jaguars.com. People better expect long delays.
I expect to write a lot of stories along, and Ryan Robinson is going to be there providing notebook material, and he does a great job, and we expect to do a job that the fans that will satisfy the fans. From my understanding, we did that last year.
Let me give you a question.
We want to do it again.
You have two defensive ends that you mentioned. Derek Morgan, the kid from Georgia Tech, who appears to be, by all accounts, more ready to take his talent into the NFL.
Right.
And then you've got a guy like Jason Pierre-Paul. I guess everybody saw the video of him do 14 backflips in a row.
Right.
The guy is a freak.
He's only played football a few years.
Right. Mm-hmm. Which one does Vic Ketchman go for? The guy with the long-term upside or the guy that can help you right now?
Probably the upside. But I got to believe if it's for the guy of the future or the guy of the present, oh, it's always for me the future. I want the guy who can be the better player longer.
Okay.
But that's not to say that Derek Morgan can't be that guy, but you have hit on the two obvious candidates as I go to the combine in Indianapolis. Last year, if you had said, Vic, who are the two obvious candidates? I would have said Eugene Monroe and Mark Sanchez. A third one would have been Beanie Wells. But I felt that either Sanchez or Monroe would be there for them last year. Well, as it turned out, they drafted Monroe. When you're drafting as high as the Jaguars are going to draft, which is to say 10 or 11, I think you should have a pretty good idea who the candidates are, even as early as 2 months before the draft. And there's a couple guys right off the top, Jason Pierre-Paul and Derek Morgan. They have to be candidates. Also, here's another guy, Joe Hayden, cornerback from Florida. In fact, right now, if I was to handicap this thing, I would say that I would bet that the Jaguars pick will come from one of those three guys. And I'll bet you that the Jaguars are going to interview all three of them.
Let me ask you, how nervous are you? We talk about wide receivers in the first round all the time. How nervous do you get about defensive ends in the top 10? I mean, based on the cat from Ohio State, why can't I even think of his name? Vernon Golston, Derek Harvey. You know, last year he went 11th, Aaron Maben. I mean, there have been so many defensive ends, and so much pressure is put on these guys to be impact players. Is there starting to be a stigma about defensive ends?
Well, the Bills had to know that Maben was a long-term project because he was coming out as an undersized sophomore. Undersized sophomore. So there's no way you draft that guy unless you are drafting him for down the road. You couldn't possibly have thought that he was going to give you immediate impact. I thought that was a reachy pick. But it was also a gutsy pick. Yes, defensive ends are high-risk guys.
I mean, Brian Arapco had a great rookie season for the Washington Redskins, but Maben didn't do a whole lot. You look at the other defensive ends who were drafted. What about Robert Ayers, the guy from Tennessee that the Broncos took? I mean, just you didn't see a lot of defensive ends, and you haven't the last two or three years, who erupted and gave you that instant impact.
And this is a good year. This is a good year for defensive tackles, too. The guy from Tennessee, Williams, I don't know where he fits exactly, but he had a real good Senior Bowl, and you got to get the big guys early, so I would think that he would fit up around where the Jaguars are. There's the undersized guys, the Alex Carringtons, and is it Austin Lane from Murray State? Carrington's from Arkansas State. Austin Lane is from Murray State. George Selvey from South Florida. He was the premier rusher, and then he had a couple injured seasons that were marred by injury, and he kind of fell off, and Jason Pierre-Paul, the other guy, came on the other side. But Selvey's a guy that could turn out to be a real find for later in the first round or second round, and you know, maybe the Jaguars will trade down. Maybe someone will fall in love with Jimmy Clausen and want to come up and give the Jaguars the second-round pick they lost last year.
It's early, but let's talk about those possibilities when we return. Final break, and then the final segment of Jaguars This Week. Sanz Lagerman, who is on his way home, hopefully to get in bed and get over this sore throat that he's got. Take a break and return. Welcome back. About 7 minutes left in the show. Brian Sexton, Vic Ketchman, Joe Fortunato. Vic headed to the combine Friday morning. Start looking for updates, what, 7:46?
Yeah. Well, you know,
that's the coin toss.
We'll have the coin toss up, I mean, pronto.
Right.
But I mean, I don't know. Maybe you can find it faster somewhere else. Please be my guest if you can. But I promise you, there I will have two stories written when I leave the office. One is they win the toss and pick 10th, and one is they lose the toss and pick 11th. And all I need is for Mike Perkins, the Jaguars video director who's representing the team at the coin toss, to call Dan Edwards and tell him which story to have posted. And we'll hit a button, and up it'll come, and you'll know who wins the coin toss. Now, is it a big deal? I guess not, except, yeah, I think
there's
it is a big deal. I think it's a lot better to have it to be number 10 than number 11 because it's not going to represent a big difference in salary. And there's always a chance that a Sam Bradford or a Jimmy Clausen.
And that's where I'm going here. What are you hearing about these two quarterbacks?
Okay.
Pre-combine.
Bradford is clearly the number one quarterback.
Okay.
I don't like him. I think he's frail. I think he's got a low release point. I think he kind of pushes the ball. I don't see a big arm. To me, he looks kind of mousy. He's fragile.
So he's the kid from Utah all over again that the Niners took number one.
I mean, I watched him lose to Florida. I watched him lose to West Virginia. You know, what am I supposed to like? That he throws for a ton of yards in the Big 12? Well, here's something else I don't like about him. Name me the greatest quarterback in Big 12 history or Big 8 history.
Lynn Dickey? I mean, there has not been Steve Grogan. In a long list
Steve Grogan, John Hadle, who played in the AFL, and Vince Young, and Cordell Stewart. There you go. Yeah, there's no Marinos. There's no Montanas. Yeah. There's no Unitases.
It's always been a run the ball.
Yeah, I mean, they don't turn out quarterbacks. And that's why I'm not a Sam Bradford guy. Clausen, I don't know. There's something about that guy. I think he's got a shot. He sure didn't get it done in college. But, I mean, was that him or was that his coach or was that – what was that? I mean, no one's getting it done at Notre Dame.
I was just about to say, you can look at every aspect of their team. How many players have they had drafted the last 3 years?
But he's an accurate thrower. I mean, he puts the ball in the right spot, and he's got a good arm, and he's got some mobility, and he appears to have instincts for the position, and he didn't miss any games at Notre Dame. And I think that he has he's not going to throw at the combine, and that's a bummer. That's a bummer because he has the kind of arm to do at the combine what Mark Sanchez and Joe Flacco did at the last two combines. Sanchez and Flacco really shot their stock up at the combine by flashing their arm strength, and Clausen could do the same.
It's a bummer for the Jaguars that he's not throwing because it would drive his interest level up if he performs well.
I agree, and the longer these quarterbacks can stay high and have another pro day, another personal workout, and keep shooting it up, the higher they climb. Although, in his case, you don't want him to climb too high. 10 would be just about
right.
That's
what I'm saying. But if he has a good
day, then you
day,
have a chance to either pick him or trade him.
Right.
And that's where I would say trade him.
All right. So, again, we're
talking. Because I don't think he's worthy of the 10th pick, but I'd sure like to see, you know, him drag somebody up and trade with the Jaguars. By the way, there's another quarterback in this draft class, Tony Pike, who the scouts hate because he's so thin. But I've seen him make some very special throws. He's a big arm guy. I don't know if he's throwing at the combine or not. I haven't heard either way. But if he throws at the combine, he has the kind of arm, especially against a weakened crop. He has the kind of arm to really make hay, to really shoot up the charts at the combine.
What would you say is most important for the Jaguars, to get the best available player or to trade back?
Does
one favor this team more than the other?
Yeah, I like trading back because I think that it matches their need.
Okay.
This is a draft that is just rich, just absolutely talent-laden with defensive linemen. And the Jaguars need defensive linemen. It's a good crop of cornerbacks, too. And I think they can get their guy anywhere in the first round, top or bottom. Would they be happy with a George Selvey or an Alex Carrington or an Austin Lane? later in there, or Jared Odrick. Probably not Odrick because they say he's more of a 3-4 end.
Okay.
But I think there's lots of guys who could help this team and would be less expensive, less risky, and would give them that extra pick in the second round.
Finally, Combine starts this week, runs into next. Free agency gets full swing, whatever that's going to be next week. And then it's pretty much going to become all labor talk now leading up to the NFL meetings, isn't it?
Yeah, but I don't, you know, John Clayton holds out hope, has told me that he holds out hope that they could actually do a new deal by the March deadline.
Really?
And I don't get it.
It's March 11th, correct?
Something like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't see any way that we avoid this going into 11.
Well, I mean, the owners wanted to get to the uncapped year, so it does away with the minimum, right? The floor that they have to spend above.
And they want to get it to the 11th hour at least, yeah, because they want to get the best deal they possibly could. I mean, if you go early,
which is what happened to them in 06. They got put up against that 11th hour.
Yeah, but they didn't do it right.
No, I know they lost it then.
The players had
the leverage then.
Listen, the players are the ones who have their hands to the fire here, because some of these guys, their contracts spike in 11. I mean, it's going to be tough to get these guys to agree to surrender 10, 11, $12 million salaries, you know, for a possible lockout, in a possible lockout.
All right.
For the sake of the union.
Safe travels this week.
Thanks.
Look forward to finding out the coin toss on Jaguars.com, 7:46 a.m. Eastern Time, for those of you listening in parts west. Friday morning. Have a great night, everybody.